Anybody hear of the book Revelation? Anybody often call it Revelations? You did, right there. People call it both. Just let's go with technicalities. It's Revelation. Go ahead, say it with me. Revelation. And then always that comes after that, you say Revelation. Dun, dun, dun. Because Revelation is the scary book in the Bible, right? How many of you have studied Revelation before? Well-versed in it? Yeah? Know exactly how it goes? No? Like, forget it? Well, let me tell you a little bit about Revelation. It's creepy, and it's coded, and it's not what you think it is, maybe. Probably. See, anyone ever seen the movies or read the books? Back in the 1970s, tell me if you were around in the 70s. Oh, yeah. Tell me if you were watching schlocky Christian movies in the 70s. I watched a movie called Thief in the Night. Anyone? A Distant Thunder might have been. There were like four movies in this series. They scared the hell out of me. And they were also, I look at them now, they were some of the worst filmmaking ever done by anyone, anywhere. So we got that going. Bad filmmaking. Theology that was entirely meant to take the book of Revelation and other books in the Bible and find ways to scare, literally scare the hell out of people, because it was made to say that you don't want this awful, awful stuff to happen to you, so you better become a Christian now. It's the whole purpose of the movies. And, that's just what it was. And then a series of books came out, the Left Behind books. Anyone read the Left Behind books? I have read all of them. I think there are four, maybe five.
11.
11, yeah. That's it. I've read all of the 11. I forgot. You know, there's four vampire novels, three vampire novels, and 11 Left Behind books. Okay. I have read the books with Nikolai Carpathia and all those folks in there. And actually, I have to say that Jerry Jenkins, who is the writer of those, he's a good writer. He can put together a great story based on whatever storyline he's going to follow. So they're compelling, and when you read them, like any fictional book, they draw you in. But notice I said fictional book. The Left Behind series are fictional. Now they're not put out as true books or nonfiction, but they're also not put out as books that if you read them, you should really take them as fictional. These are adventure books, just like the vampire books. Anybody read Twilight series? Come on, admit it. Fictional books, yeah. Harry Potter series? Fictional books. Lord of the Rings?
Woo!
Fictional books. The Chronicles of Narnia? Fictional books. 50 Shades of Grey? Look at that, there's some hands go up. All right. Fictional books, but all scintillating fiction in one way or another. The Left Behind series fall into that too. Unfortunately, what happens is then we get the Left Behind books that then are made into videos. I can't call them films. That would show a level of theological and artistic respect for them that doesn't exist. There, I just said that. But so these videos come out, I've seen at least two of the videos, and yeah, they didn't do even a good job with the source material. Just if you want to watch them, great. You know, you want to read the books, great. But boy, the books are much better than the videos. But I did hear that the Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye. Tim LaHaye is the one that does the theology behind the books that I think is just schlocky and bad. But Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins have sold the rights again to the movies, to a major movie studio, and I heard that it's in the works to have a Left Behind series come out again with Nicolas Cage attached as one of the stars. That would be cool. Or any of you know who Michael Shannon is? Michael Shannon, the actor? He would be a great, like, evil guy in that. So I can see Nicolas Cage and Michael Shannon if they did those movies. But let it suffice to say that in Revelation and in the Left Behind books, that reality is not the same between those two. Revelation is creepy, and it is coded, and it's difficult to understand, but not so that you could find a way to uncode it and then know how the world ends. It's creepy and coded because apocalyptic literature, that Revelation and lots of other literature like it are, say that we don't want the people who are in power to understand what we're writing. So we are going to send messages to our people who are reading these letters, this apocalyptic literature, and they'll get, because they kind of know what means what code means what, and then they'll know what instructions we're giving, we'll know what hope that we're trying to portray to them, and the people in power who don't know it will look at it and go, this is really weird stuff, I don't understand it, so apparently it's okay, we'll let people read it. That's the codedness in there. There isn't some secret code that says if you figure out Revelation, you will figure out how the world ends. Revelation is written as a book of hope. Even with all of the difficulty in it, and even with all the coded stuff in there, it's a book of hope, and that's evidenced by the end of the book. Today's reading is a perfect piece of evidence that it's a book of hope sent to, in coded form, to these readers. And there are certain things that you see in there. There's at the end of the story, there's a new heaven and a new earth. So, look, we're looking forward to something new. There's no scary sea. It says that the sea was no more. Now, and that doesn't mean there was no more water. There was no more ocean. But to the people of the time of Revelation, the sea is meant to be a scary thing. It's the land of sea land. It's the waters of sea serpents and shipwrecks and all kinds of things that are dastardly and scary. And then in here, the sea was no more, meaning, no, that scariness, Moby Dick and stuff like that, was no more. And it says God is with us, not just God with us is in a breathe out a sigh of relief, ah, oh, he's finally here, but God present, really with us. The part that I talked with the kids about, tears wiped away, because the sadness, the reason for sadness is just fallen away and the tears can be wiped away. And there's no more death. There's no more mourning or crying or pain because everything has become new and it's exciting. It's a great beginning. People speak in trustworthy and true words. You know, people don't have to find reasons to lie to one another just so that they can get their way. And I know I've talked about the whole lying thing maybe once or twice before. There's a difference between lying in power and telling somebody who had a new baby that their baby is beautiful, even if you're not quite sure that the baby is. Sure, they're both untrue if you wanted to say it that way, but this is lying to get your way. It's in the Ten Commandments when it says you shall not lie or you shall not. All of the you shall nots are these legal things that are going on, and they're less about saying, of course you look beautiful today, and more about not going to a court of law and lying to get your way, or lying to steal someone's property, or find a way to do that. So these trustworthy and true words are about real, genuine respect that comes, and nobody trying to take what's not theirs, and everybody being in a place where they get along. And then God was, and is, and will be. That's I am the Alpha and the Omega. It's a reminder that God was what the past required, God is what now requires, and God will be what the future requires. It's God, that description of, it's all good, I got this. That's God's words. And then this refreshing and free life-giving water. Now we could take the water figuratively, and say, because we all need water to live, right? Anybody not need water to live? Okay, good. Just making sure we have that. Water, I mean, you got to drink water often. Dehydration debilitates you, and without a few days of water, you just don't live. So the literal there is that we need water to live. And that's an area of justice in the world, this refreshing, life-giving water. If we take it literally, says that everyone should have access to that water, right? Real water, the kind of water that you can drink. And not everywhere on the globe has that. There are places. Now, we had an overabundance of water, I know, a little more than a week ago. And it all ran off and everything. And you didn't necessarily want to drink that water, but water can be processed. And we do have problems in Downers Grove. It's why the whole deal with the assessment for the water part, which you know, we're working on trying to figure that out, and the stuff with nonprofits, and I support our journey to try and figure that out. And I also recognize that there are many buildings and less green space around, and water needs to go somewhere. And everybody that doesn't have lots of green space, the water doesn't get to absorb. The infrastructure just can't handle it. So villages, towns, states have to figure out what to do with wastewater. But we also need to do how to adequately have water that's distributed to everyone that needs water. And there are ways that it's happening that people need to, I think, need to get on board with. One is a corporation should not be able to control, we get to take water from this place right here, like Lake Michigan, and no one else can use that without paying a licensing fee. It doesn't seem to work. In countries where water is more scarce, there should be more access to well-digging materials. And that's a money thing, and there's technology that can make that work. I've seen this marvelous thing about clean water. Clean water is also, you know, dirty water is just as bad as no water in those cases. Have you ever seen these? It's like a straw filter that a commercial for it shows a person taking the straw and putting it into toilet water and drinking because it filters 99.9% of everything bad out of the water. Now, the toilet water was not filled with anything but just water. But the fact that it was a commode was, you know, kind of gross there. But it shows that even dirty drinking water then can be filtered through this simple technology that is available very cheaply to people all throughout the world. So refreshing, life-giving, free water. It's God's vision for the future, and it ought to be something for the present, where we care enough, and we have plenty of water and too much of it, to be able to find ways that everyone gets at least enough water to live. There are the things that people need to live. And it's not necessarily all these things on the list, you know, tears wiped away, no scary sea and anything like that. But we all have ideas about what would the perfect world look like. And for me, one of the things is water for everyone. It's a really important thing. It's life-giving. Over the years, I've asked people, what's your vision of how the world should be and how God is and how that all should work together? And I've asked people, what do you think about God? Do you believe in God? Do you not believe in God? I love to have those kinds of conversations. With the confirmation class, great discussions that we have about the nature of God, about their journey of faith, and almost every week when I'm down there, we get to sort of unpack what they've done there. And next week, 4 students are going to be confirmed, and you'll get to hear some of their faith journey during the journey time, and I'll sort of put little bits and pieces of things that they have said to me into the sermon. People talk about God as being one who makes life possible. Like water makes life possible. God makes life possible. And God being one who has much love for humanity. Like this much love for humanity. And God who inspires us to do good. And God who doesn't abandon us. As a matter of fact, catches us when we fall. Catches us when we really fail. God who loves us through anything we can do. Like the water that's needed for everyone. This life-giving water. Can you imagine what other things a congregation or a people could do to make things better? To literally give life-giving water, but to figuratively take those kinds of things that water represents, the life that it represents, the healing that it can represent, and make the world a better place because of that. We operate with PADS. You know, the Benevolence Committee also took a look at what else can we do, because PADS addresses a specific need. Someone needs a place to stay for the night. It's not a super long-term thing. As a matter of fact, from the statistics for PADS, someone in the PADS system, although people sometimes stay longer than others, just a couple months is typical for a person to be in the system before they have found adequate housing for it. And so by us hosting now and then in the future continuing to work with PADS, we address that need. And I think that's part of this world that God has this vision for, this life-giving water in the figurative sense. But we also started looking at how do we help people get to a transition from not having a home into having a home. And so we started giving money to and want to get more involved with an organization called Bridge Communities. Bridge Communities that helps people make the transition from not having a house to having a house. There are more organizations than Bridge Communities, but that's one that also helps people get life-giving water. I want our congregation, I want all of us individually, I want us to find ways to share the kind of love, the kind of hope, the kind of restoration that God brings through this life-giving water with everyone. And I've got no room, I really have no room for descriptions of God like are described in the books and the movies, where God is this cosmic sheriff saying, I'm going to get you for that, and you better make this decision, otherwise you're not going to be part of my club, and then you're going to burn, or you're going to be weeping, or all these awful, awful things, because it's not how God works. God is the God of hope, the God of hope described at the end of Revelation, after all of the coded creepiness that it goes through, that says, there's no scary sea. I am with you. I'll wipe your tears away. There's no more death, no more mourning, no more crying, no more pain. Words are trustworthy and true. God is. God was. God will be the beginning of the end. The beginning and the end. And God says, to the thirsty, I will give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life. This spring of the water of life. Water of life. So drink it in and share it, because there is plenty, oh, just plenty, to go around. Amen.